What is going on, everybody? Jamie Shaw here on the Absolute Basketball Podcast, and I am very excited for you guys to listen to our interview with Brewster Academy head coach Jason Smith on today's episode. We go through his time as the coach. We go through what got him into coaching. We go through the stigma against fifth-year players that's going on throughout the country, the prep schools. We go through the NEPSAC. We talk about who he thinks the best team that he's coached is in the last 20 years, and so much more. But before we jump into it, if you would, please go ahead and subscribe to this podcast. If you would, rate it 5 stars. And if you would, leave in the comment section below what you enjoyed most about what Coach Smith said. Those really help us with the rankings. Those really help us get these coaches' stories, these players' stories out to more people and get it out to more. So if you would, rank, subscribe, and comment, that would be great. That really helps us out a lot. But without further ado, here is Brewster Academy head coach Jason Smith on the Absolute Basketball Podcast with Jamie Shaw. Thank you guys very much. What is going on, everybody? Jamie Shaw here on the Absolute Basketball Podcast. Very excited about today's guest, Brewster Academy head coach Jason Smith. Jason, how you doing?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Man, I'm good. I appreciate you taking some time here. I know during quarantine, we're all kind of zoomed out by this point in time, but I appreciate you taking a few minutes.
No, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So, as a native of New Hampshire, did you ever think growing up in your state that it would hold one of the biggest names in prep basketball?
You know, growing up in New Hampshire, obviously I was a basketball fan. I played 3 sports growing up, actually played baseball in college. But growing up, I had an opportunity to be exposed to the New Hampton School, which is a really good program. So I had a chance to go watch games, which – you know, in our home state. So, you know, I'd always aspired to have Brewster to be a competitive program. And I think that we've certainly established that.
So speaking toward that a little bit, since 2010, you know, Brewster's won 7 national titles, had 10 NBA draft picks, 37 overall alums playing in the NBA. What do y'all have in the water up there?
Yeah, I think that we've just been very fortunate to have had a lot of talented kids join our community. And it's it says a lot about our league that we compete in, the New England Prep School League. But just the main thing is we've provided a platform for kids to really go on and continue their career, maybe receive some exposure that maybe their previous stop, you know, or maybe they had an injury.
And I wanted to kind of expand on that a little bit. You know, last year alone, you put 11 players Division I with 6 of them signing Power 5. This type of placement happens every single year at Brewster, it seems like. What is it that makes Brewster Academy so attractive to these high-level, next-level prospects?
I think now what kids are seeing is just the success that our alumni have when they leave here. You know, so I think that, you know, social media has obviously exploded over the last, you know, 7-8 years. So I think it's that information is more readily available for kids and their families. Mm-hmm. So I think that when they see – you know, somebody in your home state, Devontae Graham, come here and really see his recruiting just explode and, you know, just take advantage of the opportunities that provide a kid in a postgraduate year and the success that, you know, guys like Devontae have had when they've left here. You know, it's one thing sending kids to the next level. It's another thing that they're successful when they get there.
And then obviously recruiting is a two-way street. Outside of, you know, coaches will always follow the talent, but outside of the talent, what makes a Brewster player so attractive to these college coaches? They keep coming back year after year to re-up.
Yeah, I think the main thing is the structure that a boarding school can provide. You know, the academics are very high level. The kids are prepared for when they step on a college campus, just in terms of time management, you know, being able to understand that a typical day here in the fall may consist of strength and conditioning at 6 a.m., classes from 8:30 till 2:30, basketball practice or workouts in the afternoon, you know, study hall in the evening. It really simulates what it will be like when they do make the transition to a college program.
And then, so you started at Brewster 19 years ago, it says on your bio. What was it that got you into coaching in the first place?
Yeah, I just growing up had tremendous coaches myself, whether they were, you know, baseball coaches, basketball coaches. You know, I still talk to my high school coaches pretty frequently. I talked to my high school basketball coach yesterday, talked to my high school baseball coach a few days ago just to, you know, check in, just maintain relationships and see how they were doing as well as their families. So I think the fact that I always had really good mentors growing up that were coaches, you know, I knew at a very early age that that's what I wanted to do.
And then you mentioned that you're a three-sport player in high school and stuff. And even though that you played baseball in college, what type of basketball player were you?
I was somebody that definitely knew their role. I was a point guard, and I was fortunate to play with probably one of the best players to ever come out of the state of New Hampshire, aside from Matt Bonner. Matt is probably the best player that our state's produced. But I played with a friend of mine named Scott Drapo, and Scott Drapo was recruited by Coach Calipari and went to UMass, you know, when in the early 90s when Coach Cal really started to get it going there.
Would Coach Jason Smith recruit player Jason Smith?
Oh, no shot. Player Jason Smith couldn't play dead in a cowboy movie, but he did. He definitely knew that what his role was, and that wasn't to shoot. It was really to get the ball where it needed to be.
I got you.
I joke with my guys that my players that, you know, my coach let me really shoot from the foul line, and that was it. You know, that was the only place I was allowed to shoot from. And sometimes he probably wished he could have declined the penalty and taken it on the side. So
that's funny. So there seems to be a really negative stigma, especially here down south, about fifth-year players and all this type of stuff where people – what is your take on that?
Yeah, I think the biggest misconception about prep school or a postgraduate year is that it's for students that academically haven't been successful. Mm-hmm. And Brewster and most of the New England prep schools that have been around for 200-plus years, I mean, we're celebrating our bicentennial this year. So mm-hmm. we've been around as a school a lot longer than the basketball team's been successful. Wow. So I think, you know, our postgraduates at Brewster, if they wanted to matriculate to college, they certainly would have had multiple offers and opportunities. It's really kids that do a postgraduate year are electing to, you know, get into that next tier of colleges, whether it's academically, athletically. A lot of times kids will do a postgraduate year. Maybe they graduate at the age of 17 mm-hmm. and feel as though they just need an extra year to mature and develop, or, you know, take another year of high level math and English to maybe bump up to that next tier of colleges, you know, more competitive school.
And when it comes to kind of scheduling for you too, I know as somebody who's put on events and everything that a lot of schools, oh, we don't want to play a fifth year program or all this type of stuff. Do you come across that a lot? And where do you stand on that?
Yeah, a lot of events will, it's actually, I see it the other way. A lot of events will want to have us, but when I communicate that we do maybe have postgraduates, and I think the biggest misconception is, you know, we usually have maybe four or five postgraduates a year. It's not entirely, you know, fifth year seniors or postgraduates. It's maybe some kids that are coming here for their senior year or maybe a junior year and then four or five postgrads. But a lot of times when I'm contacted about events, I'm not really interested in playing events that have high school rules, mm-hmm. you know, because in prep school we play NCAA rules, and it doesn't seem like much, but that extra 8 minutes makes a world of difference, you know. And, you know, we use a 94-foot floor, you know, so it's the floor is 10 foot longer. The three-point line is different. We play with a shot clock. You know, I won't say what event, but we went to one event years ago that's regarded as one of the top high school events in the country, and it was a good opportunity for the kids, but we get down there and there's no shot clock and the other team held the ball.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, like, we just traveled 1,500 miles. Like, what's going on here? Like, this isn't like a state championship game that they're going to be talking about in town, you know, 40, 50 years down the line. This is just a random game in the middle of December that, you know, you're trying to showcase for coaches and fans.
Does that kind of – I mean, having that type of thing happen, is that kind of like a – obviously I'd be pissed about it too, but is that kind of like a feather in your – like, okay, we're that good. These people are this feared, this scared of us type of thing. Like, where do you – like, how does that –
No, I mean, I would do the same thing if I maybe couldn't match up.
Yeah.
You know, and again, I as I'm a fan of basketball, and I love learning from all coaches. So on a, you know, random Tuesday night, if we've already practiced and, you know, I'm sick of watching college games on TV, I may take a drive and watch a local high school game in the state where I know the coach does a really nice job. Yeah. You know, it may be somebody that has never won a state championship or never produced a college player, but I just know that this gentleman does a really nice job for what he has in terms of talent.
Yeah, absolutely. Always learning, always watching. So as we said above, you know, you had 11 players signed D1 in 2020. That also means that you lose 11 players off of this year's roster. Harry Davis was the only underclassman that you had on last year's roster. And it's been announced also Zaire Wade and South Carolina commit Devin Carter are coming. What are you expecting from these players coming up next year?
Yeah, it's crazy as it sounds. That's customary for us. We turn over our roster almost in its entirety every year. Harry's a nice player. Harry practiced with us, but he also played in 20-plus games with our varsity team so he could get game experience and repetitions. So at the moment, Harry's the only returner that we have in our program, but it's not uncommon at all. You know, I think that all new guys coming in, they know what the expectation is. You know, tradition, as they say, tradition doesn't graduate. You know, the goal every year is to be the best team in the country and be in a position to compete for a national championship.
So to that, every single year you bring in an entirely new roster, it seems like, you assemble all that type of stuff. What is this process of assembling a new roster every year? What does this process look like for you?
It's very time consuming. on a given year, we'll get anywhere from 800 to 1,000 inquiries mm-hmm. of kids that are looking to come to Brewster. And now some of them, you know, may not fit the academic requirements. Some of them, you know, maybe don't follow through with the process. You know, they say they want to come to play at Brewster, and I, you know, politely remind them that we are an academic institution, and, you know, it's not like, you know, signing up for the local AAU team. You know, you have to go through the admissions criteria in terms of applying and submitting recommendations and transcripts. So you know who's really invested mm-hmm. by the people that will turn around the application, the recommendations, the essays, the transcripts, the standardized test scores. Again, it shows who's really interested in being part of our community.
And then also, too, once you bring in these new players, you know, you only have them for a limited amount of time. Then you have to go play games and stuff. How is that every single year kind of having to almost like Calipari with the one and done stuff, break them down to build them back up and stuff? How does that process go every year?
Yeah, it's probably one of the things that I enjoy the most every year is trying to get, you know, for the most part, 12 guys who have come from a situation where they were the man. You know, I think that in most cases, every kid that comes here, you know, was the leading scorer or the second leading scorer on their previous team. And, you know, they're maybe not accustomed to sharing the ball or they're high volume shooters and getting them to understand, you know, we want to make sure that you can play with others and ultimately everybody, you know, the more success that we have as a team, that's going to translate to the individual.
So this new G League initiative now has them bringing in guys straight out of high school and everything. A couple years ago, you had Jalen McHugh, who went straight to the NBA out of Brewster, all that type of stuff. What are your thoughts? You probably see this differently than most people, having been through it with LeCue and having the high caliber players that you have. What are your thoughts on this initiative that we're going through?
Yeah, again, if Jalen had a great experience here, he was completely invested in our community. But the one thing that I tell people is we are a college preparatory school. Mm-hmm. So we're preparing kids not for the NBA, not for the G League. We're preparing kids for success academically in college. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that's why our days are so structured and it's, you know, you have to be very disciplined. And I think that's why when our kids transition here to a college program, you know, the time management skills that they've developed in boarding school really help them in the long run. So, you know, I think that kids, if they wanted to, should be able to go to the NBA like they did, you know, 15, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if that would affect us because we're typically, historically, not getting those kids that are thinking they're going to go to the NBA or G League. They may think that maybe a year or two down the line. And most of our guys that have gone on to the NBA, I would say a majority of them did at least 2 years in college. Mm-hmm.
So we've been in quarantine now for a number of weeks into months and stuff. How have you been handling this time in preparation for next year?
You know, I think that I've been as busy as ever just because kids don't have AAU. Mm-hmm. So they're, you know, reaching out to prep schools, you know, expressing interest. And, you know, I think kids and everybody, coaches have more time on their hands, you know, so I've definitely fielded more calls and emails of people interested. You know, the best thing about, you know, the last 2.5-3 months is spending time with my family, being with my my son, who will be 5 next month. So that's, you know, even though I'm home doing work, you know, having him with me, you know, and being able to just take him for a walk around campus has been pretty enjoyable.
Yeah, that's nice too. I've been able to spend time with my daughter, and that's just been, it reminds me, like I sit here and think about this previous time. I was like, man, I'm doing a great job as a dad a year and stuff. And it, this quarantine time just really showed me how much time away I spent.
Right.
You know, it's been nice. So you've been outspoken on Twitter, speaking in unison with the Black Lives Matter movement that's going on. What are your thoughts on the entirety of what is going on in the world after the murder of George Floyd?
I think that it's something that is long overdue. I think that, you know, again, the voices and silence is acceptance. And, mm-hmm. you know, you have to draw attention to the way people are treated, and everybody should be treated equally. And I think a lot of that starts with the leadership. Mm-hmm. I just imagine that, you know, the events, it's a very sad place that our world is right now. But at times, I think I mentioned to you earlier, we had a vigil here on our campus in a small rural New Hampshire town, and there was well over 1,000 people that participated. Yep. You know, in a town that, you know, is predominantly Caucasian. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a biracial son, so it certainly means a lot to me that there was that many people involved in our school community here at Brewster. Mm-hmm.
And then kind of, you know, you mentioned the leadership and all that type of stuff. You know, you're about to have 12 new young men come underneath your wing and all that. How are you going to convey, or how are you looking to convey that message to them as a team?
Again, I think it all just starts with building relationships and communicating, talking about things. You know, when the tragic events of our country that's happened in the last few weeks, what I've done is I've just reached out to guys over the years, and I just asked them, you know, simple questions like, have you ever been, you know, unfairly, you know, stopped by the police, mm-hmm. you know, or been, you know, been had dealings with law enforcement, and you feel it was based entirely on the color of your skin. So I think a lot of it starts with just dialogue.
Yeah.
And talking about it, because again, I think that it's not something that can be quiet. It should never be quiet. It should definitely be out in the forefront.
Absolutely. I think something big that I've come across these last couple of weeks that I just really didn't do a good job before, and it goes exactly in unison with what you're saying, is listening.
Yeah.
Is just sitting down, asking the question, and just sitting and listening as to what it is, you know, that everybody goes through and all that type of stuff. Because typically I had learned, I was like, oh, I'm a great listener, all that stuff. Not at all the case. I would always listen with the intent to respond.
Right.
As opposed with listening to the intent of learning.
Right. And I think what makes a boarding school community unique is, you know, for example, Brewster, we're only 350 so students, but of the 350, I mean, we have 28 different states represented in our community, more than 20 countries. So you have a lot of cultural diversity, you have a lot of economic diversity, and a lot of people from different backgrounds. Yeah. That can, you know, hopefully students return to campus in September and we can continue to have this dialogue.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's going to be the thing that's going to be interesting is the continuous, continuing on and all that and everything too. And it's another thing that I've learned too about myself is when I say I'm here for you, that's not on my terms. I'm not here for you in the way that I say is here. It's like, I'm here for you and how you need me.
Yeah.
And that's another thing these last couple of weeks that I've really grown and learned recently. But so last season, Brewster was the NEPSAC 3A regular season champions. For those who are not in the Northeast, explain the NEPSAC and the talent that has kind of for everybody.
Yeah, the NEPSAC, again, I'm admittedly biased, but I just think is the premier league in the country. Mm-hmm. You know, it's broken into classifications. We compete in the AAA, which is the highest level. And there are seven teams in AAA, and then AA is the next tier down, and they have about 17, 18 teams. Mm-hmm. But just the amount of talent that comes through the NEPSAC on a yearly basis is crazy. AAA, again, we play NCAA rules. You know, so during the quarantine, a lot of times you have dialogue with former players, and they're talking about the best guys that they played against in prep school, or what was the best team. So that was a interesting debate that we had on social media, the best Brewster team over the last 20 years. But just some of the guys that we've competed against over the years, Andre Drummond was in our league. Isaiah Thomas, in my opinion, was the toughest player to prepare for in my 20 years at Brewster. Just, you would think that you did well, you know, defending him and look at the box score after the game, and he somehow had 37 or something like that. Nerlens Noel, George Niang, Wayne Selden, Noah Vonleh. So, you know, to give you an idea, the team that actually finished seventh in our league this year, they still probably had 8 or 9 scholarship level players.
Wow. That's, yeah, no, I don't think these people realize who, you know, from the outside looking in, just how really talented, and these are grown men too. Like, these aren't, you know, little, these are grown men.
Yeah. That's the biggest difference, is our teams in our league are dominated by guys that are 18, 19 years old, mm-hmm. as opposed to a regular high school where you're going to see some 15, 16, 17 year olds. You know, there's a world of difference in just physical maturity when you're talking about 18, 19-year-old young men.
Absolutely. So you've been very successful so far, and you're still young, I guess, in your growth. What is the end goal, you know, 10 years, 20 years, whatever, down the line for Jason Smith?
You know, I've been here 20 years. I hope that I can be here another 20 years. You know, ultimately, the best thing about the experience that I have here at Brewster is just being a small part of my players' path in their journey, whether it's in athletics or when they go on to become, you know, husbands and fathers and professionals in business or industry. So I just enjoy the relationships that I have with my former players. You know, I joke that I hear from them as much when they leave as when they're here. You know, just, you know, there's not a day that goes by where I probably don't at least get a text message from somebody that played for me again 10, 12, 15 years ago. And again, I think that's why I have, you know, such close relationships with my former coaches, you know, because they were tremendous mentors to me. And that's as much as the success we've had as a program, that's equally as important to me.
Absolutely. And with so many big time things that you accomplish yearly, I mean, you get draft picks and you have NBA All-Stars and championships you win, and then individual game matchups that you have across the country. What are some yearly benchmarks that you strive to achieve every single year?
You know, it's interesting. I think that the team goals have stayed the same on a consistent basis. It's, you know, never lose at home, never lose back-to-back games. In every event or tournament that we participate in, we want to leave with the championship. Mm-hmm. So it's really, those are the three goals that, you know, I think that probably the team, you know, 18, 19 years ago came up with those goals. And it's, despite a completely different group of kids every year, it kind of rolls over every year.
It's kind of one of those things where those small goals, if you get that done, the big things will happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
What can we expect from this upcoming year's Brewster Academy team?
Again, I hope that we'll have I hope that the students will be on campuses and boarding schools across, you know, in classrooms across the country. You know, I think that remote learning was a challenge for a lot of kids in this country. Yeah. So hopefully you'll see kids returning to classes in the fall. And the goals remain the same. We're going to play hard. We're going to compete. And hopefully come March, be in a position to compete to win a championship.
And I guess that kind of begs the question, too. Obviously, you being a boarding school and things being in quarantine and all that kind of stuff, how has that affected you guys, and then kind of what's your plan coming into next year?
Yeah, it's something that's probably discussed, you know, by our school management team on a daily basis, and it's something that they're continuing to evaluate. you know, the plan is now for students to arrive here on campus. And I think it's a little bit easier for boarding schools to quarantine because, you know, everyone lives right here. Now, I think that may change a little bit with the ability to walk in and out of town. Mm-hmm. But I think boarding schools are equipped to handle the COVID, you know, or CDC requirements. You know, for example, our average class size is about 10 or 11. Mm-hmm. So it's not like the classes are 25, 30 kids.
Yep.
Most of the dorms on campus are smaller in nature. So most of the dorms are about 14 to 16 students. Mm-hmm. So you can social distance that way. So I think that it's something that as an administration, they're continuously evaluating and making changes so we can have our students return to be a part of the Brewster community in the fall.
I got you. And then kind of wrapping things up and to absolutely completely put you on the spot with all that stuff with the, you know, the social media, you said the best Brewster teams and all that type of stuff. Who do you feel is the best Brewster team that you've coached in the last 20 years?
That's a great question. 2012, 2014, and 2015 were probably the three most talented teams. Uh-huh. The 2017 team, although they didn't have the NBA caliber players, they might have been the best team in terms of overall cohesion. Mm-hmm. Just played really well together, got along together. They defended, and it's the only team to go undefeated in our league in over 20 years.
Wow.
But 2012, 2014, 2015 were probably the most talented. 2012 would have been TJ Warren, Mitch McGarry, Samaje Christian, Aaron Thomas, Jalen Reynolds. Wow. Then 2014 would have been Devontae Graham and Isaac Copeland from North Carolina with Jonah Bolden, Donovan Mitchell. So both of those teams each had four NBA guys.
That Donovan Mitchell, Devontae Graham backcourt sounds pretty menacing.
Yeah, that backcourt. And then we had a three-guard rotation. The third guard in that lineup was Jared Terrell. Yeah. Who was with the Timberwolves last year, and then Jonah Bolden up front with Isaac Copeland.
Oh, man. Skilled front court guys, too, there.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, that's awesome. Jason, I appreciate you spending some time here with us. I appreciate getting to know you a little bit more, too. I love the fact that we're able to let these guys listen to. You know, we've had college head coaches, Jason Capel, and, you know, even assistants with Duke and all that kind of stuff. But it's great to let them hear the prep school ranks as well because, you know, it's with the way that this thing's going these days – prep school is going to become a very viable option coming soon for a lot of high school kids.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, and it was great speaking with you as well.
Absolutely. Guys, thank you all very much for tuning in on the Absolute Basketball Podcast. For Jason Smith, I am Jamie Shaw, and we'll see you next time.